Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we talk about ideas and strategies. I share blueprints and I tell stories. I talk about some of my big epic fails I've made along the way. I interview experts, all because I truly believe that teachers play a vital role in helping students reach their creative potential. And one of my favorite ways to do that is with doing a student blogging project. And so today we're gonna be talking about this idea of launching a student blogging project. And if you're worried about doing it wrong at first, I just wanna point out, it's okay to do it wrong at first. When I first started out with blogging, I treated them basically like journals, and students had such compelling, you know, titles as warm up. That was a blog post title, or today's lesson, or just the date. But eventually it grew into something that was much more authentic. And so that's what I want to talk about is what would it mean to do a student blogging project as an end of the semester project that you could do as you ease into kind of the end of this semester and just thinking about the challenges inherent in teaching in December. And I just want to point out that December is exhausting for teachers. The days are shorter, the weather grows colder, at least here in Oregon, it gets wetter. Students are anxious, whether it's buzzing excitement for vacation or a sense of dread that some kids feel about going into homes that are going to be unsafe during the holiday. This year in particular, it feels way, way harder. Students are experiencing pandemic fatigue, and many of them are feeling the loss of not being able to visit loved ones for the holidays. And teachers are tired, really tired. They're tired of redirecting misbehavior and tired of the mid-year pressure of the test and simply tired of the sheer energy it takes to be a teacher. This year has been especially hard, with everything from school board battles over critical race theory to the deviant licks trend from TikTok that led to theft and vandalism. Add to this the sub shortage and the quarantines, and it has been absolutely exhausting. Student engagement is challenging this year, and it feels disheartening when students don't turn in work. While there's no perfect solution for this, as teachers, we can choose to end the semester on a creative note. One of the best ways is through a project that taps into student interests. See, I think that when we start with student interests, it can help students gain that creative confidence. Certain students might struggle with a particular skill or concept. They might arrive to your class feeling like they're behind. However, when they pursue their interests, they build on their own expertise and they gain greater confidence in your classroom. Starting with student interests sends the message that we are all experts in something. This creates a culture where students are able to learn from one another from day one. It's also a chance to be humble and to model the learning process for our students. Starting with student interest also kind of affirms their agency and autonomy as learners. As the instructor, you're saying, I want you to share your expertise. I don't care if people think it's shallow or insignificant. Who you are matters to me. So geek out on that Hello Kitty or limericks or Super Spicy Pepper Jams or Minecraft or Lego or baseball or ballet or cooking. I want you to share it. In other words, when students are able to pursue their own interests, they have more agency in their learning and they're shifting from compliance to engagement and to a place of true empowerment where they have voice and choice in their learning. One of my favorite ways is with a student blogging project. Now, blogging, if you're not familiar with it, is a popular way for students to share their thoughts and ideas with the world. This podcast is, for example, housed on a blog, and I've been blogging since probably 2001, maybe 2002. So, gosh, it's coming up on 20 years probably. Wow, I am feeling super old right now. Anyway, while blogs originally started in the 1990s as weblogs, right, that's where we get the word blog from, they grew in prominence over the next two decades as it became easier to edit, to add multimedia, and to leave comments. You could also start blogging on a platform instead of having to code things yourself. So how exactly does a blog work? Well, a blog can be broken down into a series of blog posts. Most bloggers create new posts on a regular schedule. For example, this podcast is, and the blogs that I write that kind of connect with it are pretty much weekly. But some people blog daily, some blog monthly. It's really up to you in terms of your favorite approach to the schedule. Blog posts tend to go in a reverse chronological order, with the newer posts at the top and the older posts at the bottom. Most blog posts have a compelling title that's capitalized. They often have shorter paragraphs and even bulleted points and lists. And many bloggers break information down using heading, you know, having headers, and also including visuals and videos. I, for example, love to add sketch videos that I create. By the way, if you haven't followed my YouTube channel, it's spencervideos.com. And speaking of sketch videos, I have a prompt that you can use for students. So when you want to introduce students to blogging, I have this prompt called Getting Started with Blogging. It's designed specifically for you to play out of the box for students so that when they want to get started on blogging, it's there for them. So anyway, that's the gist of blogging. Now, when it comes to student blogging, if you teach younger students, I think Seesaw works pretty well. For older students, kind of mid-level range, I think that KidBlog is fantastic. It's been around for a while. EduBlogs, I think it's one of the oldest of the different blogging platforms for students. And WriteAbout, which is something that I actually helped co-create and launch. At the high school level, the previous options all work, but so does something like Blogger or WordPress.com, something like Wix, Weebly, those all work. But some of those do cost money, so I'll just kind of put that out there. You got to be careful with that. And there are education versions of all of those platforms as well. One of my favorite ways to get started with blogging is something called a Geek Out blog. Now, I have mentioned this before, so this is going to be a little bit familiar for you if you've heard this. Back in, I want to say May of this year, I did a podcast that was all about getting started with Geek Out blogs. But the idea of it is that Geek Out blogs begin with student interests. And if you're wondering, like, well, how do I align the standards to student interests? The idea is that most of the reading and writing standards are topic neutral or content neutral. In other words, they're all about specific discrete skills that students must master. So you align it to all of these research standards, writing standards, all of those different standards, and then students can choose whatever topic they want. So that's kind of the beauty of it. And you know, if you're interested in kind of getting started, if you're thinking, you know, what does the Geek Out project look like, you can download the Geek Out project, and the blog resources that connect to the podcast. So again, this podcast can be found at spencerauthor.com/start-student-blogging. So start student blogging. Or you can just look at my most recent articles. You'll see it right there. You can kind of see it in the show notes as well. So just a heads up. But here's the general process. Phase one is where students geek out on their topic. This is where they figure out what they want to do. In many cases, students struggling with blogging because they haven't actually read many blogs. They might have read some articles online. They might have looked at some magazines. So in this phase, I really think it helps to start with having students examine examples of professional blogs. They could be gamer blogs, sports blogs, fashion blogs, music blogs, foodie blogs, movie blogs, pop culture blogs, music blogs, any of those things. And just make a curation of some of the best blogs that exist in all of these different genres. If you're not sure where to go, ask your friends, put it out on social media and say, what are some of your favorite blogs that you follow? And then that will allow students to emulate what they want. Now you might think, well, geez, you know, my students aren't professionals. These are professional bloggers. You know, isn't that going to be different? But think about it this way. Students are inspired to become great at skateboarding, often by watching professional skateboarders, right? Or, you know, a professional football player by watching, you know, football on TV. They get inspired, you know, to play music by listening to professional bands, even if they're not professionals. So in the same way, I really think they will be more inspired to create their own blogs if they see blogs that are professional. And if they see blogs that are not other student blogs, that don't seem to be too, you know, school related, that seem to connect to an authentic context. And I think that becomes really important. And during this phase, it can help to have them create a list of criteria. You know, what do you see in the blogs? What do you not see in the blogs? What do they write about? What do they choose not to write about? What is the style of blogging and what makes it compelling? What features do they see? And then let them kind of evaluate these blogs. What do they do well? What do they do where they could maybe improve? And then tell them, hey, look at those areas of improvement and think, what could I be doing as a student in my own blog that would kind of cover things that aren't being covered? And then the next phase is once you have this curation of blogs and they've explored those examples, you can move to a place where you ask them to come up with the topic or topics of their blog. And you can ask them questions like, what do you really care about and why? What is something you're passionate about? What is something you know inside and out? What is something you nerd out on? What is something you believe deeply in? What do you love? What are your hobbies? What do you know a lot about? If you could invent your own course and teach it to others, what would it be? And those sort of spur them on to think of these ideas of, oh, there is something that I know that's worth blogging about. As a middle school teacher, I loved watching how diverse their interests were. I mean, they were all over from, you know, K-pop to Minecraft to, you know, movies to whatever it was. And I love the fact that they really got into this idea of choosing whatever topic that they wanted. The next idea or the next phase is to really have them think through their audience. So once they've done this and, you know, the next level, I would say have them clarify who is the audience. And have them ask questions like, what do you picture in your audience? Who are they as people? What are their desires? What are their beliefs? What do they know? What do they want to know? And then it can also help to walk them through the levels of privacy. So level one is keeping your blog private. Level two is semi-private. Level three is semi-public. And then level four is public. So private would be alone, semi-private, they share it with their pairs, with their peers, with their small groups, you know, with their teacher. Semi-public would be, you know, sharing it with the school, sharing it with their classmates, maybe sharing it with another class around the world. And then public would be, you know, sharing it publicly with everyone. And I want to point out that if you go that route, you really do need to make sure that you have parental permission, right? That you have those forms filled out. The next phase is really simple. Have them come up with their blog title. It could be, you know, they just use their name, which is really common. In some cases, they might use a title for their blog in the same way that, you know, magazines sometimes have titles, newspapers have titles, books have titles. Many blogs have titles as well. In fact, my blog started out as Musings of a Not-So-Master Teacher, and then eventually it was The Creative Classroom, and now it's just John Spencer. And then after that, the next phase is to have them generate ideas. And there's a lot of different ways that you can do this. So they've created their blog. They might have created kind of a visual aesthetic for their blog, a theme if their blogging platform allows that. And then they can create a list of questions that they have. They might do a research of existing blogs in that domain and ask themselves, you know, what ideas haven't been explored, what perspectives haven't been considered, and what could I write about? You can ask students to find connections between their topic and larger trends in the world. So I found that, you know, having them come up with an initial list of questions is great, but also telling them, hey, look, I want you to have a blog post that deals with social, cultural, economic, environmental, or technological trends, and at least connect it to three of those factors so I can incorporate elements of social studies into it. And it is amazing what students write about. For example, there was a group that did fashion, and they wrote about fast fashion and environmental impact. They wrote about, you know, things like one student wrote a very vulnerable, powerful blog post about feeling like as someone who was gender non-binary, they didn't have clothes that fit them. They had to choose between boy and girl clothes when they went shopping. And they said, you know, what would it look like to have a shopping location, a store, a fashion boutique that was completely non-binary? And it was beautifully written. Another student wrote about gender and in terms of gender expectations and school dress code. And it was powerful what they wrote about. You know, one person wrote about gaming, and they wrote the history of gaming and how it's evolved and how it's changing, and what it's like to interact with people around the world when you play video games on different servers. And then encourage them to just keep a curation of other blogs that they can look at for inspiration, and then really get into what it would mean to be inspired and maybe write a reaction to another blog post, but make sure that they do not plagiarize. So this is a great chance to kind of incorporate a mini lesson on plagiarism. After that, you can provide them with ideas that they can customize. You might, you know, I have 10 different general ideas. You know, research your topic and use 7 things you might not know about blank, or 7 fascinating facts about blank. Think about a strong opinion that you have and write something persuasive. Write the story behind a particular geek out topic, the surprising story of blank. Write a how-to video showing someone something, you know, how to blank in blank easy steps. Do a Q&A post with questions that people have submitted and answers. Do an interview with an expert, you know, where you say blank on blank, blank and blank, right? Someone on blank topic. Write an introductory post, right? How to get started with blank. Do a how-to, you know, how to do blank. Write a compare and contrast where you say blank versus blank, or how blank compares to blank. The bottom line is what you're doing is you're giving them these sentence frames. Now, that's helpful for ELL students, and that's sort of where the sentence frame concept comes from, but it's actually helpful to all students because they get inspired to use those frames and modify them. And then it's a chance to just start blogging. Now, in this phase, I find it really helpful to do a 1 class period lesson on specifically how to do research. We use the 5 C's of critical consuming. There's a sketch video that goes with it if you want to use that with students. There's a lot of different ways to do this. But the idea is that you teach them how to find facts, how to make a claim and support it with facts. And they learn that whole concept of really backing up their ideas with facts. I've also found that it's helpful to use a checklist when they write their blog post, and they just use this checklist before they press publish on any post. So, you know, a checklist might say, you know, my post has a title that's interesting and compelling, the title at the top and the headings are all capitalized. My post has at least 1 visual or picture that's Creative Commons compliant that doesn't violate copyright. I've broken my blog post down into headings or headers. I've used labels or tags related to the topic. My post is proofread for spelling, grammar, other mistakes. I've shared my posts with my teacher and my classmates. Maybe I've shared it on social media. In some cases, you might have them do. And then once they've done that, you can run a writer's workshop. You can have them do the 20-minute peer feedback process, or you can just have them publish their blog posts. And then encourage them to comment on each other's blog posts. You can use sentence frames where they learn how to respectfully give feedback to one another. I love having a phase where they give feedback on the writing, which is private, and then feedback on the ideas where they actually leave comments on each other's blog posts and generate a true discussion on the ideas. So I always say criticism should be private, ideas should be public. Comments on ideas should be public. And then give them a chance to reflect on their process. Let them think at the very end when they're done with blogging, you know, how did blogging go? Were you able to engage with an audience? You know, what did you learn from it? What was the hardest for you? What was the easiest for you? Do you want to continue blogging? And actually, when you do a blogging project, I think it helps to, you know, have them make, you know, 5 to 7 posts on the longer side, if you want to take the rest of December and do this as a project, maybe 3 or 4 blog posts. They don't have to write a lot. And then each week, maybe take one class period per week, or maybe make it the homework that they do each week, and have them continue to blog each week for the rest of the year. And then their writing becomes, in one sense, a portfolio of their expertise and their ideas, but also it becomes a place where they can engage with a larger context, which, you know, that could be fellow students who are interested in the same topics on Write About. For example, there's these interest level groups where they can, you know, publish to other groups who share their same interests. Or if they're going public, you know, it can be shared with a broader audience. And I love how many, say, high school students have found an authentic audience in high school, and then they run with it in college and after, and they've become, you know, established bloggers later, and they were really introduced to this in high school. But even if they don't become bloggers forever, and that's okay if they don't, the cool thing is that it's authentic and it's real to them now, and that they see research and reading and writing as deeply personal and authentic and relevant. And when that happens, they are changed forever. Hey, thank you so much for listening. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcasts? And tell a friend about it. It's one of the best ways to share this podcast is through word of mouth, and it really does mean a lot to me when I either get feedback from you or when you share it with others. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.